Jean Stratt actually started painting as a young girl, and was invited to join the review as an illustrator. And there she really honed her craft. She says, "I had the best teachers in the world." And by the time she left, she was a professional artist. And what you see around you is some of the most beautiful, detailed wildlife painting that you're ever going to see. She developed quite a reputation as a wildlife artist before she and Bob came to Alberta. And Bob came to be to work on the Blackfoot Reserve, and then eventually became principal of Namwiatoskatan Native School. And it was at that point that Jeannie really threw her heart and soul into the Native work and the children of Maskwacis. She had such a passion for them. If you get to the existing school, there's going to be a new one, a new high school built out there, it's already in progress. But in the existing school that was opened in 2003, Jeannie did a full wall mural, a very pastoral setting of the Native life, sort of before Columbus discovered it. And it's amazing because as you move in front of that mural, things move with you. The perspective changes, so you've got to get out there and see it. It's just fantastic. And another one of Jeannie's passions is really the children. And she illustrated a number of Bible lessons for Monty Church and the North American Division Bible Studies for Native Ministries. And this piece in front here, of Jesus and the children, if you come close, you'll be able to see that Jesus has very First Nations features. And she wanted the children to be able to identify with a loving Jesus who wanted them to come to him. And the little girl who is just to Jesus' right was a student at our school. Kelly pointed her out and she said, "I taught that little girl 25 years ago." And she uses models from real life of people that are attending the church. She just actually finished a commission. Bonnie Church, right? Is that right, Bob? Asked her to do something for a new video that's coming out about some petroglyphs, some paintings on rock that were discovered and connect the Sabbath to prehistory, really, or before Columbus, in our terms. And so she continues. She's a working artist and just so dedicated to the First Nations work, and she has given in her will, right now, some of the proceeds from her work do go to support the church, but in her will, she has willed a portion, her copyright in reproductions to benefit the church in Maskwacis. So what that does is even after she passes away, her work is going to continue to benefit the church in Maskwacis for 50 years, because the copyright lasts for 50 years after the death of the artist. So I think that was such a brilliant thing to do. And we won't know, like any of us, we won't know the impact. And she won't know, how much her gift amounts to in dollars, but in impact as well. When she passes away, and the church won't know for 50 years, because it's going to continue. It's going to continue to grow and to add and to, God's work. So we have a little video that we did, and I just want to say thank you to Bob for persuading Jeannie to let us photograph her as she did some painting, and you'll recognize the work when you see the video. But Jeannie is a very special woman. Heart as big as Texas. But I think she's from Wisconsin, right? Or Ohio. So heart as big as Ohio and maybe Texas. So we'll just go ahead and share that with you now.
Thank you. clear as I remember. My mom tells me that she kept me quiet in church by letting me go. So I guess that's the beginning. And so I've just been doing it forever. However, you know, that's just amateur stuff. I mean, natural talent, but when I had the privilege of working with the Review and Herald Art Department for 8.5 years, those artists were kind enough to each one teach me what his expertise was. And so after 8.5 years, when I left, after I was married, we all had to go teach somewhere. I had to quit the Review, and when I left, I was a professional. When I moved to the Blackfeet Reserve, I would nurse all day and paint all night. I had to make a choice, because I couldn't keep that up very long. So at that point, I chose to go the art route, wildlife art, that is. Well, Muscogee happens to be very dear to my heart. And I can't think of a better place to have the money spent. Just want to be a blessing to them in any way I can.
So, yeah, Jeannie's pretty special. If on the back table there, we have some of the invitations. If you want to take one home, you can take home a little reproduction of one of Jeannie's works. So you can pick that up on the when you're ready to leave. But I also wanted to give you just a little bit of we talked about this. I was hoping Jeannie could be here, but she couldn't. She was having delivery of some paintings today, and she was. She didn't want to leave them on the front step, and it might rain, you know, and stuff. So she couldn't be here, but Bob is here. And so I'm going to ask Pastor Weave to come up, and we would like to present Bob with the Nicodemus Award on Jeannie's behalf. Okay, Bob, can you come up?
We're going to ask you to come right up here, Bob. Bob, it's just a real joy and a privilege for us to present to you, to Jeannie actually, through you, the Nicodemus Award for this year. Thank you so much for the work that, thank her so much for the work that she has done. And so tell her congratulations on our behalf.
Well, I would certainly like to thank the conference for all the support that they have given to Native Ministries the last 8 or 10 years. It, to me, it's just been phenomenal what Alberta Conference has been doing for First Nations people. You may not realize it, but our Native school is the largest First Nations school in all of North America that is operated by the Adventist Church. And this is just because of the conference commitment to supporting the Native children. And I'm so thrilled because when we went to grade 9 and the kids finished up, they went back out on the streets, they ended up going into back into the gangs. They went, you know, whatever problems were going on. Now these children have the opportunity to go all the way through high school, and our teachers really work to make certain that these kids If they'll attend school, they will finish school. And then they have the opportunity to make a choice to go to Berman or some type of a technical training or whatever it may be. But they will have that opportunity where they didn't have it before. And thanks again to the conference.
Thank you, Bob. I'd like to just tell you a little bit about what is around you. The heavy framed pieces are all original works. And this one is the one, of course, that she was working on in the video. So this is the newest one. But the heavy framed pieces are the original works. The lighter frames are reproductions, they're prints. And I'm not sure, Bob, how many of the prints are available? I know that what we're exhibiting may be the only copies that she has, but there was one I saw, I think the wolves were two. But
I think at this point in time, the otters are not available, the whitetail is not available, everything else is available.
Okay. And those may become available because the African pieces are actually reproductions on canvas. Chicle, I believe, is the name of the process. And, you know, you get up to them, you can see the texture of the linen, at least in good light. I'm not sure in this light whether you can tell that it's a canvas. But those are for sale on a website. And I think there will be more pieces added to that as well. The paper pieces on the pianos are pieces that were commissioned by the World Wildlife Foundation, and World Wildlife Fund, pardon me, and they appeared on stamps around the world. I noticed one from Senegal, and the pieces that you have on the tables are, you know, envelopes with the stamps. You know, they were printed. You've probably seen those occasionally, the stamp and envelope combined. So she was a very big deal as a wildlife artist, and she's doing more of that now that she has actually retired. She has more time to dedicate to her wildlife. So anyways, enjoy what's around you, enjoy the refreshments behind you, and if you're, you know, if you're not dedicated to another seminar at 2:30, please, we're going to be having Darren Swan and one of his associates come and talk about personal tax and what's new in charitable giving. Just a little bit of a tax update at 2:30 to 3:30. So you're more than welcome to stay, but if you need to leave to get to another seminar, that's perfectly fine. Just stop at the front table and pick up your little thank you gift. So enjoy what's around you. And the people around you. Thank you so much for coming. All right.
Yeah. intrigues me. I'd like to know what caused her to put and the gentleman is reflected in the room. Like, I mean, the fact that he might do this is creation. So there's, it's totally now, I don't know if this was that.
Give us their information and for you to ask questions. So we're going to, I just want to, if you can find your seat, and if you want to turn around because the tables are around, feel free to do that. We're looking after the second generation too. There was a bunch of teenagers came in the filter pipe. So that's what it's all about, right? Okay. Well, I'm really thrilled that we have not one, but two tax specialists with us here today from MMP. And Darren Swan is no stranger to our campground. Some of you may have heard him because this is his third visit. Is it what? Maybe it's the fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah, time passes quickly when you're having that much fun.
Yeah.
So and he, with him today is Rhea Jolly, or Jolly.
Jolly.
And she is also a tax specialist at MMP and Red Deer, both from Red Deer. And so they have, between them, a lot of expertise. Rhea, you're an individual or personal tax specialist, and Darren deals with a lot of the state and charitable stuff. So we'll just turn the time over to them and go to it.
So I wonder, can you guys hear me? The, I'm going to see if I can do it without the microphone on there, but I just want to thank Lynn on there. I see everyone pop their bubblies here because we're about to talk tax, so it's a time to start right. So, yeah. On there, but as Lynn mentioned, I'm with MNP. I've been with MNP for about 16 years. I am a tax specialist with the Central Alberta Tax Group. I do specialize or help clients navigate through complex tax issues as it pertains to estate and succession planning and personal and corporate planning, with primary focuses on the agricultural side of things. And then I'd like to. Rhea here is our personal tax wizard, so anything, any questions on personal tax, I am pretty sure Rhea will be able to answer that as well. So.
We're going to make him use the mic because we want to record this for posterity.
So everything's on the record then.
Yeah.
No off the record discussions, I guess. But yeah, I want to just thank the conference and Lynn McDowell specifically for inviting us back. I said this, I think, is my fourth time here, and I have a great time presenting. I think, as I told Lynn before, I said, I really enjoy talking about taxes. But one of the things I've been inquiring about over the last couple of years is whether talking taxes can qualify for a disability tax credit. And So I actually had Rhea check into the Alberta Medical Association to see if it is a disability, and right now it isn't, but I do promise that I am seeing a therapist about this. So so today we're actually going to be chatting a little bit about planning for a tax-efficient estate, but before we get into the estate planning and some of the charitable donations and tax strategies from a planned giving standpoint on there, we're going to go through a couple budget updates. Both a couple reminders from the 2015 budget, but we also have a brand new government as well too at the federal level and at the provincial level. So definitely there's been some changes. So I just wanted to highlight some of the changes on from the budget. So what we're going to cover is some of the 2015 budget reminders. There's been some tax rate changes as a result, both at the federal and provincial levels. I just picked out a few things from the 2016 federal budget that might be of interest, and then we're going to have Rhea present on planning for your estate, what happens on death, and some tax efficient strategies for the disbursement of your estate to your beneficiaries, or even as it ties into the planned givings. And then we'll get into the charitable donations. There's been some developments on that side from a tax perspective, so we'll talk a little bit about that and some planned giving strategies as well. But we do encourage you, as we go throughout the presentations, if any questions do pop up, please ask for sure. We're here to answer any questions that you may have, even if it doesn't pertain to the presentation. Like I said, we love talking about taxes, so any question will be welcome for sure. The only thing is I can't talk about UK taxes and the Brexit and what's going on there. So a couple things from the 2015 budget. This is actually when the Conservatives were still in power. They made some changes to payroll, some changes to testamentary trusts or your estates as it pertains to the tax planning strategies. There's been some personal tax changes, both for the lifetime capital gains exemption, specifically for the farmers and fishermen, if you happen to be a fisherman. And then a couple changes on the registered retirement income fund, so the RIFs. So those that may have employed people, one of the changes from 2015, whether you operate as a sole proprietorship or through a partnership or through a corporation, if your monthly withholdings to the government is less than $1,000 a month, you actually can remit on a quarterly basis versus a monthly basis. This was the government's way of trying to reduce the red tape. So to make it a little bit easier on your filing obligations. I don't see too much impact from this, but it's worth noteworthy for sure. One of the major changes was how your estates are dealt with. So when you pass away, normally what happens is all your assets go into, from a tax perspective, into what's called a testamentary trust. Now, what some tax planners were doing, or some people were doing, they were setting up multiple trusts for the benefit of various beneficiaries. More often than not, it was actually done for legitimate planning reasons. An example would be if you had four children and you wanted to set up assets for those four children, or even grandchildren, and say, well, I'm not ready to give them the assets just yet, so I'll set up multiple trusts or estates for the benefit of those children. Once they attain a certain age or meet certain requirements, then those assets can be distributed out to those beneficiaries. However, CRA, or actually Parliament, it's not CRA, Parliament, saw some perceived abuses, because one of the benefits of the testamentary trust or your estates is any income earned in there gets another set of what's called graduated tax rates. So here in Alberta, our first $10,000 is tax-free. From 10 to about 18,000, we pay 15%, 18 to 40,000, pay 25%, and we keep going up the chain. However, trusts have the same rules. No, they don't get personal exemptions, but you get another set of marginal tax rates. So anything under 40 grand is 25%, 40 to about, I think it's 90,000, it's at 32%, and then keep going up the chain. So what Parliament was really concerned about was they're setting up these multiple trusts for tax reasons, because normally what would happen is any income earned over and above, say, $120,000 is getting taxed at 39% on there, and people were setting up these multiple trusts for that reason. So Parliament actually said, no, we're going to put a stop to this. And what they basically said, starting January of 2016, so if anyone that passes away in 2016 and going forward on there. Only one estate's going to be allowed to have graduated tax rates, and you got a limited time period for that, and that's 36 months on there. So if you had multiple trusts or estates set up, any income that's earned, if you have more than one, is going to be taxed at the top marginal tax rate. And here in Alberta, the top tax rate is 48%. We haven't quite crossed the 50% threshold yet, so. But I got some notes for that for you guys down the road.
Is that the highest in the country?
I actually got some notes on that. We'll see. I actually stacked Alberta against every other province here, so. Is everyone here from Alberta? Yeah. Yeah. Any from the Maritimes? Okay, that's good. You're doing all right then. The other one that actually falls outside the rules of these changes is what's called qualified disability trust. So if you had a beneficiary or a child or a grandchild that qualified for the disability tax credit, usually you're going to set aside income to make sure they're looked after. They're going to give them the graduated rates on there, so access to the lower tax rates on there. And then the other real change is normally when you pass away, you can pick something other than a December 31st year end. Those are changing. You have to have a December 31st for your estate year end. And I found just from practical experience, it's actually easier that way anyways. But sometimes for the first year's administration, if you passed away on, say, June 30th, it'd be good to keep a June 30th year end because you got a full year to deal with. There's lots going on there. But they're going to force everyone to go to a December 31st year end anyways for tax purposes. The other change, major change from 2015's budget, which is good news, bad news, but mainly good news, is, and it pertains to your planned givings or your states. On there, in the old rules, actually, if your will designated amount to be given to a charity or to the church or anything like that, you're allowed to claim that on your final tax return or the year prior. However, with the new rules, they're going to say, nope, you don't get to claim that on your final tax return. We're not even going to give you guys the donation credit until the property or the cash is given to the church or to the charity. Once that distribution is made, then the executor of your estate is going to have an option. And their option is, we can claim it on your first year of the estate that you made the donation, earlier tax year of the estate, so if it took 2 years or 3 years to make that donation, you could pick a prior year to offset any taxes that was owing in the estate, or you can go back to your final tax return or the year prior to death as well. So a lot more flexibility for your executors, which I think is actually good news, because we actually had a client situation whereby dad actually met with his two sons who were the executors of their estate. And he wanted to basically change his will. And he wanted to make a donation to the church and some other charities as well. The problem was he told his sons, who were the executors, this is his wishes, this is how we'd like to divide it up. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it to the lawyer to update the will to reflect that intention. So what ended up happening is when he passed away, he had actually a fairly sizable tax bill on his final tax return. But because he didn't put that into his will, he wasn't allowed to claim the donation on his final tax return. It's when the cash was distributed, because the son followed dad's wishes and made that donation, they got the donation in the estate, but the problem was there was really no income in the estate. It was all the income was reported on the final tax return. So unfortunately, we weren't able to claim it. So with these new rule changes, that will actually will help in a situation like that. That would certainly help. So the only bad news will be timing. So when, if it takes 1 or 2 years for the estate to make the donation, then on your final tax return, you're still going to recognize the tax liability, which Ray is going to walk through that, how that works. But you're going to have to pay the tax bill, make the donation, and then go back and amend your final tax return to get the refund of taxes back. So there will be a little bit of a timing issue there.
Yeah. Could we just pay out the charity and hand that over and get the receipt before they call the taxes and do it that way? Would it be easier?
It would be, yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the people, the
Yeah, if the executor makes it before you file your final tax return, that would address that issue for sure. Sometimes one of the challenges, though, is you have to wait for probate, and probate sometimes takes a little bit of time to go through everything. So if it works within that time frame, I think that would work wonderful, because then you got options available to the executor. So good question. So just a couple other changes from the 2015 budget. One of them was the Registered Retirement Income Fund. They actually reduced the minimum withdrawal amount starting in 2015, actually. And it really takes effect in 2016 to see the full impact of it. But in the past, when you were withdrawing from your RIF balance, they started with a 7% notional rate of return from that balance. They're reducing that by 2 percentage points, so it's going down to 5%. The other good news, which actually helped the farmers and fishermen, is the lifetime capital gains exemption. This exemption is basically shelters capital gains on certain property, so there is no tax ultimately when you transfer assets or sell assets. So for farmers and fishermen, it actually went from $813,000 at the time in 2015 up to $1 million, and it's just capped right there.
Question on that.
Yes.
How does that work if you have ceased farming, say 10 years ago, and you've been leasing it out to its income property now? Is that capital gains apply in?
So the question is, if you were farming that land, we'll can pick on farmland?
Yeah.
So if you were farming that land, you stopped farming, and then you started renting it out to a neighbor, can they qualify for the exemption? Yes, it can. The reason being is to qualify for the exemption on the farmland, it's not necessary that you have to be farming at the time of the sale or the transfer. The key is, do you meet the farming tests? And what the farming tests are is, if you acquired before June 18, 1987, so there's a specific date, but if you acquired before that date and you farmed it for 5 years, and the land in question, just stick on a quarter section of land, if 160 acres, as long as you employed 81 acres during those 5 years in your day-to-day farming operations, you're going to meet the capital gains exemption. And once you meet it, you lock it in. You qualify on there. If you acquired it after 1987, there's different tests that apply on that. And usually the biggest one is the gross income. So if your gross income from farming in 2 years while you were farming it exceeded all other sources of income, you can qualify. Or if you farm through a partnership or through a farming corporation, you could potentially qualify that way without going through the gross revenue test. On there. What's interesting is you don't have to be the person that meets the farming test. You actually can look up the chain as well. You can look to parents or grandparents. That's a different test. So there's the capital gains exemption test. So does it qualify for the lifetime capital gains exemption, which is the $1 million here? But if you wanted to transfer that farmland to a child or to a grandchild, the tests are a little bit different. If you didn't want to trigger a capital gain because you have the ability to transfer farmland to children or grandchildren without triggering a capital gain, and that's the big test there, is the time and use test. You farmed it longer than you rented it out. And the use test is if the land in question that you're trying to transfer without a gain is you use more than 50% of that land in your operations when you were farming it.
The problem is, you see, you may farm it several years, but then you get old, you retire, you don't want to farm, you rent it out. If you live too long,
yeah,
you don't live too long anymore.
And you wouldn't be alone. And it's sometimes a struggle for from an estate planning perspective. We go through this all the time. Is when's the right time to relinquish control? Usually, the first thing we'd look at in something like that is, do you have capital gains exemption, the shelter of the gain on land that won't qualify for the tax-free rollover of the children? If we have enough capital gains exemption, then we don't have to worry about those rollovers. You can go offside those tests because we know we have enough exemption to shelter the inherent gain on the land. However, if you're off, if you don't have enough capital gains exemption, then it becomes almost estate planning or a transition planning to make that determination, because tax is one factor, but there's also the factor of, do we actually relinquish the land down to children or grandchildren now, or do you need sources of income for your retirement years? Do we need income off that land? So that becomes kind of a family decision at that point in time. Yeah. Yes.
What if you have multiple ownerships on your property? Your children have part of it and part of it. Is there any advantage then at the time of your passing?
It's going to be a little bit of a legal question on that as well, because one of the things you have to look at is, how are they registered on title on the land? Or are they registered as joint tenants, or are they registered as tenants in common?
No,
joint tenants. So the income that comes off that land, is the income split between all parties?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay. So everybody has a beneficial ownership in that land. If it's registered as joint tenants from an estate.
Yeah, I'm not talking about fire land. This is
just personal land. Just property. Personal property? Okay. What will happen is, whatever your ownership is in that land, when you pass away, you're going to deem to sell that at fair market value. And that that will transition right to whoever's on title, remaining on title. So it's kind of a last person standing when you have joint tenancy on there. So if, say, me and Rhea, we own land together, and we're earning income off of it, but if I die first, even though I may have my wife off to the side, since she's on title, she gets ownership of the land. It actually passes outside my estate. My wife doesn't get an interest in that land. All right, so, but from a tax perspective, because it went through, because I had a 50% ownership in that property, then my estate has a tax liability. If I have an inherent gain on that property, when I pass away, I'm deemed to sell that at fair value, and my estate has to recognize the income off of that property. Yeah, so when the property came from your parents, they would have paid the tax bill associated with that property when it transitioned to you. And as you referenced, kind of what's that price that you guys got it at? And it probably should have been whatever the value was at the time you inherited it. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you determine what that price was?
I wish I had that answer. Yeah, we could certainly chat. There's different ways to go back. Usually one of the easiest ways, I would say, is look to land. Is it land and buildings?
A house and a small property.
House and small property? Yeah. Starting point would be what's on land titles. So usually there'd be a value attached to land titles on there. If it's not on there, you can go back to your parents' return if you still have it and see what they reported on their tax return, because that would give you that number as well. But we could certainly chat about other things after the presentation as well. So. If you're certain that they're going to inherit that property, there may be some merit to it. One of the things from a tax perspective you always have to be careful of, when you add people to title, you may inadvertently trigger a deemed disposition at fair value. You might trigger a tax bill right when you add somebody to the title. There's different rules. There is a concept called beneficial ownership versus legal ownership. Legal ownership can change, but if the beneficial ownership in the property, so basically if any income off that property is still residing with you, is going to be staying with you and you're just adding them on the title for estate planning, CRA does opine that as long as beneficial ownership doesn't change, even if you added somebody the title, there won't be a disposition at fair value. But the minute there's some income splitting, they want you to sell that at fair value.
What about yes. people that sell their property out to their family members before so that they are titled one? Is that a good thing to do?
Yeah, it comes down, when you add them on title, I always say this to clients, easy in, hard out. You say, okay, it makes sense now. I'm going to add them the title because I think right now they're going to inherit this property. But if you ever change your mind down the road and say, no, I don't think I want you on title. I think I want somebody else on title from an estate planning. To get them off title, it's going to be very, very difficult to do so. So it comes to carefully planning out your estate, I guess, when you're thinking those things. It does help for, and I think Lynn, yeah, and from a legal perspective, there is legal implications on doing that as well, which is a little bit beyond my expertise. I always lean on our lawyers to make sure everything's done correctly. But from a tax perspective, when you add people on title, there could be a tax consequence. There may not be a tax consequence depending on what your intentions are. That's usually that's the true accountant answer, and actually it's CRA's answer. Every time we ask CRA a question, they always will say it depends. It's based on the facts of the situation, so. Question? The 5% is based on the, say you turn 71 and you convert it into a RIP. This only applies to the RIP balance. So the 5% actually pertains to, at the start of the year, the minimum amount you have to take out of your RIF is 5% of that balance. You can go higher if you so choose. There's no requirement to take the minimum. You're allowed to go over and above. On the RSP side of things, you can withdraw at any time out of the RSP. There is no restrictions, but it obviously will come as with a tax consequence because any RSP withdrawn will be full income to you as well. So there's been a couple changes on the corporate tax side of things, so we'll shift from personal tax onto the corporate tax. There was no changes at the federal level to the general corporate rate. So at the federal level, all corporations, except for small businesses, has a tax rate of 15%. Provincially, the provincial corporate rate actually went up by 2 percentage points. So it used to be a flat 10%. So it was 25% for corporations here in Alberta. Now it's gone up 2 points, so they're up to 27% tax rate. Now for small businesses, actually the Conservatives announced a rate reduction for small businesses. It was at 11%, and they proposed in their 2015 budget, obviously going into an election year, I think this was part and parcel, they wanted to drop it down to 9%, but they wanted to phase it in over a 5-year period. So by 2019, it's going to go from 11% down to 9%. However, in the latest budget from the Liberal government, they said, okay, we'll accept the 0.5 percentage point decrease. So in 2016, we went from 11 to 10.5%, but they decided to say, no, we don't want to keep proceeding down to 9%. We're going to freeze it right at 10.5%. So there is not going to be any federal rate reduction. So it's going to be capped at 10.5%. Now in Alberta, or small business rates, so that's basically any private corporations with income up to $500,000 was entitled to this low rate, and Alberta was charging 3%. So combined, for 2016, the small business rate is 13.5% for small businesses. However, in Alberta's budget this year, they said, okay, if the federals aren't going to drop the rate, I think we want to help the small businesses here, so we're going to drop it by 1%, starting on January 1st of 2017. So starting next year, small businesses will have a 12.5% tax rate. So I just wanted to contrast the corporate rates on various sources of income. So this actually pertains to Canadian-controlled private corporations, so the small businesses. So any income in from $1 to $500,000. In 2015, it was 14%. 2016, it's 13.5%. 2017, it's going to be 12.5%. If you happen to earn income over and above $500,000, you fall into the general corporate rate. So in 2015, they raised it by 2%, but it took place on July 1st, so there's partial, there's a proration. So they're going from 25 to 26%, and then 2016, we're up to 27%. And then all investment income earned inside corporations, there's a huge deterrent not to earn investment income in corporations because the government doesn't want the infinite deferral of tax within the corporation for people to invest and access low rates, so they want to charge a higher rate. And basically they said for interest and investment income, tax rate in 2016 is over 50%. For any Canadian dividends, portfolio investments that you may have, it's up to 38%. And capital gains rate is 25% inside corporations. So slight theme, tax rates are going up on there over the next couple of years, or over the last couple of years here. Yes.
Say your business is a very tiny business and you made less than $5,000, are you still being taxed or no?
If it's a sole proprietorship, it'd be at the personal tax return rate. So, yeah. Corporate rates is if you operate through a corporation. So at the personal level, tax rates are going up. We mentioned the 48% tax rate here in Alberta if you're at the top end. Part of the reason why it went up is in December of 15, the Liberal government announced created a whole new income tax bracket. So for any income earned over $200,000, they're going to add a 4% tax rate to that. Alberta also upped it too, and I think I have that on a future later slide here. On there, but with the federal increasing by 4% at the top level, it actually pushed a lot of provinces, Alberta excluded though, over the 50% tax rate. And we'll walk through some of the contrast between the provinces, and we'll find out which provinces, from a tax perspective, is the tax haven in Canada. So, but the good news, I guess, the Liberals did announce on the second lowest federal personal tax rate, they dropped it from 22% down to 20.5%. So there was a slight tax decrease. So I think the savings of that, yeah. So as Ray noted, if your income is between $45,000 and $90,000, you're going to see a tax decrease by 1.5%. So I think it's the maximum savings is about $640, if I remember right. Yes?
Just for a minute, I want to jump back to this personal income tax thing.
Yeah.
Seniors have been able to split their income between them. Now, did they do away with that totally?
Good question. So did they eliminate the income splitting between seniors, or the pension splitting, actually?
Yeah.
They did not eliminate that. They kept that. What they did eliminate, though, is what's called the family tax cuts. So the Conservatives actually put in they called it the family tax cut. And basically, if you were married with children, I think they made a TV show that way. But if you're married with children under the age of 18, they said we can pool the husband and wife's return together and then see what one was the most tax advantageous. So, and they usually gave a little bit of a tax cut that way. So, and they capped that at $2,000, but the Liberal government did away with that one though. They said we don't want that. But for the pension splitting, they kept it, which is great news. So, yeah. Yes. You still can. The requirement is as long as one of them is over the age of 65 and collecting an eligible pension income, you can split that with somebody under the age of 65. That's a spouse. So at the Alberta level, 2015 is when they announced their rate increases. Didn't feel the impact in 2015 so much. The reason being is when they made the announcement, it was made in July of 2015, and it took effect October 1st. So there was a proration in 2015, but in 2016, the full tax rate increases are taking effect. So they basically created four new income brackets. So they're going back to a progressive tax system. So they're going to range from, used to be a flat 10% rate. Now it's going to go from up to 12, 13, 14, and 15% if you happen to be in the 300,000 or more bracket. So you're asking about the tax rates in amongst the various provinces? I don't know. And of course, I'm going to go off record here.
So Alberta is at a 48% tax rate at the very top rate. So compared to our neighbors, if we go back to 2014, we were at a 39% tax rate at the top side. Saskatchewan was 44%, BC was 44%. So we actually held an advantage, Alberta held an advantage over their neighbors from a tax perspective. Now with the changes that's been done, we're pretty much on par with our neighbors, Saskatchewan and BC. BC's at 47.7%, and Saskatchewan's at 48%, so we're pretty much tied. But if we add up all the provinces over 50%, we have Manitoba, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Ontario, Prince Edward Island, and Quebec. So seven provinces, or six provinces if I add up right. The tax haven in Canada, none of it. 44.5% is the lowest tax rate.
It comes with trade-offs, I imagine. So. But I thought it was kind of interesting to see that, and even just the mindset to go over 50% for some of them. And I feel a little bit for our maritime cousins down there, because usually one of the biggest one is professionals coming in. And generally professionals will have your doctors, dentists, and that sort of thing. So to attract good talent, sometimes that might be a factor in their decision-making process. So on there. With that being said, I know the government's trying to simplify the tax system for everybody, and actually Canada Revenue Agency did come out with a new simplified tax form for everybody, so you don't have to pay us to file these complicated tax returns and worry about those rules. So the new form that they issued out was the 1040 EZ. How much money did you make? Just send it to us. So the 2016 budget, so it was announced by the Honorable Minister Bill Morneau in March of this year. So I just picked out a couple items that might be of interest for you. One is the new Canada Child Benefit. They did implemented some new boutique tax credits, and they also eliminated some old boutique tax credits that was implemented by the Conservatives. So with any change of government, it's kind of out with the old, in with the new. So given that Justin Trudeau used to be a teacher in a former life, he implemented a new tax credit for teachers. So any teachers that spend their own personal dollars for their classroom supplies and that, which is pretty common for sure. So they said we got to give recognition for that as well, because it's not coming out of the public coffers on there, and it's coming out of their own personal money, so we should give them a little bit of a break. So some welcome news on that side of things. So basically they'll grant the credit up to $1,000 that you spend at a 15% rate, so it could save up to about $150 in taxes for teachers. The one big change, and what they campaigned heavily on, was changing the Canada Child Benefit. They basically wanted to consolidate a lot of different programs into one. And in the past, for anyone that had children under the age of 18, they would have been receiving what's called the Universal Child Care Benefit, which was $160 a month for children between the ages of 1 and 60, or 6, 60. Okay, we'll take out the zero on that one. Between 1 and 6, or 0 and 6, they got 160 a month per child. And between the ages of 7 and 17, it was $60 a month. So, but that you had to include in your income. So the Liberals scrapped that program. They also consolidated what's called the National Child Benefit Supplement and the Child Tax Benefit as well into one program. So starting in July, if anyone has children under the age of 18, make sure you cover their ears because you don't want them to hear this. The parents are going to receive tax-free monthly payments, and these payments are going to be income tested based on your prior year's tax return. So the lower your income is, the more benefit that you'll receive per child. So, yeah. So for actually Melissa and I know we've been running it through with clients, and it's one of our planning consideration points, of course, when we're talking about remuneration strategies with clients. Yes. That if your income is too high, they will cut that out. So, yeah. So if you're, I think, I can't remember what was the cap limit. Was it 200,000? Yeah. I think the cap, if I remember right, is once you hit 200,000, you won't be eligible to receive any monthly payments. But if you're under that, actually for most people, they should receive, should notice an increase in their monthly payments from the past. So, and July of 16 is when it takes effect because it's based on your 2015 reported income. So I always joke, I said with our clients when they have their children, said, well, you know, you don't want children in the room because technically they can go to you and say, Dad, you only got this money because of me. Make sure you put that away. So I just threw this more for curiosity's sake. It's one of the things that Bill Marnone announced was he wants to find $3 billion of tax savings within the budgets on a go-forward basis. And of course, we're running a deficit at the federal level. So he's looking at different ways to save tax or save some revenue. So when they're estimating the cost for this, $3 billion is not an accidental number. The reason he has $3 billion that he's trying to find is because the extra cost for implementing this program starting in 16-17 is estimated at $2.6 billion and 17-18 at $3.4 billion. So it costs a little bit extra dollars to implement it, and that's where he's trying to find savings. So speaking of savings, so to find those savings, what he wants to do is take out an old conservative boutique tax credit, which was the children and arts tax credits, where every individual or every child you could save up to $150 and $75 respectively for every child in the fitness and arts credit. And he's proposing to phase this out over a 2-year period. So they're going to cut it in half in 2016 and it's going to be gone by 2017. And this one was a little bit surprising to me. But one of the changes that he also announced was eliminating the education and textbook tax credit. So if you were participating in a post-secondary education for every month, whether it's part-time or full-time, they gave you a credit, a textbook credit. So instead of submitting receipts, let's make this simple. We know it's going to cost, I think it was $60 and $400. I can't remember the numbers offhand. $200 and $400, I think. But anyways, he wants to eliminate those credits and he wants to redistribute those funds to help lower our children attending post-secondary and from lower income families. He wants to do more financial assistance that way by increasing the savings bonds associated with it. And one of the sad news from a donation or planned giving side of things, and I thought this was great to help encourage great donations to like the church, is that one of the strategies, or actually one of the opportunities that are available for everybody is that publicly traded shares, when you make a donation of that, you're exempted from any capital gains tax associated with it. So this was a 2015 budget announcement. they wanted to do the same thing for if you did a sold land, whether it's farmland or any other type of land that you have, a property, or shares of private corporations. If there was any inherent capital gains on that, if you made a donation of that property or you sold it for cash and donated the cash to the charity, they would exempt you from capital gains tax on that. So it was almost a win-win situation for all parties involved. So the taxpayer who wants to make the donation wouldn't have to pay any tax on it and also gets the benefit of the donation tax credit. But in the 2016 budget, they decided to reverse course and said this wasn't a worthwhile exercise, so they decided to abort this proposal. This is just stroking our ego here. Instead, talking about the meaning of life versus tax advice. Is before I turn it over to Rhea, is there any questions just on what we've gone through? Yes.
I heard at some point they're thinking about getting rid of the tax benefits for donating to charities with
Yeah. Well, there was talk, and this was actually at the provincial level. Jim Prentice, when he was running, or actually in the, announced in the budget, that he wanted to reduce the donation tax credit. Because Alberta actually enjoys a donation tax credit of 21%. And you factor in, at that time, the top tax rate is 10%. So there was a really added incentive to do that. And what the Conservatives announced at the provincial level was, let's drop it down to 10% credit. So it would essentially reduce your tax credit. They reversed course pretty quickly after that because one of the things out of that credit is it really is to incentivize or reward people who make those donations. So they reversed course, and I've never heard anything at the federal level whether they would do anything there. So,
the questions have been really good, and I'm sure that Rhea and Dan would be happy to talk to you privately afterwards, but we want to leave Rhea some time to cover her topic, and we have to be out of here by 3:35. I'm stealing a little bit of time here. So we'll just, if you could hold your questions, and we'll let Rhea proceed.
Sure. Yeah. No, I know we'll certainly be around after the presentation to answer any questions you guys may have. I said I love talking tax. These have been great questions, but with that, I'll turn it over to Rhea.
All right, so I'm going to talk about, I'm going to talk about planning for your estate. So there are two certainties in life, death and taxes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So what happens on death? So essentially what happens is all of your assets that you hold, they are deemed to be disposed of immediately before death. So what that happens is you determine the fair market value of your assets and then less the cost, and you typically incur capital gains, everything becomes taxable. There are some exceptions. So if you, in your will, leave everything to your spouse, everything could roll at cost to your spouse, and therefore you've just deferred the taxes onto them. Also, as Darren was discussing, there is also the farm or fishing property that you can leave to a child, grandchild or parent. So same thing, cost just rolls on to them and you're essentially just deferring tax. So a deemed disposal is you have your fair market value less whatever you paid for it, what you acquired for it, and the difference would be your capital gain or capital loss, and that's 50% of the gain is what you would pay tax on. So different types of property. So cash is really an after-tax asset, so you've already paid tax on it. So there's no implications at that point in time. If you have your pension, so you have your RIF or your RSPs, if it's left to your spouse, then you don't have to report the fair market value of your pension on death. Instead, it gets taxed when they start to withdraw those funds. If it is left to anyone aside from your spouse, then the full value of your pension is taxable upon death. Your investments, so you have a deemed disposition at fair market value. So whatever the assets are worth on date of death, you would report that as the proceeds. And then the fair market value rolls to the estate and becomes the estate's cost. So you actually have... Sorry. Yeah, so if the investments... the fair market value of the investments when you dispose of them on your final tax return, that becomes the cost in the estate. So therefore, it's lower taxes when the estate eventually disposes of those investments. Your principal residence, so everybody gets their personal residence exemption. So if you just own one property, then you don't have to pay tax on it. But if you had a second property, such as a cottage, then you can only deem one of those properties to be your principal residence. So the other one, you would have to pay a capital gain. And then if you had any jewelry or art, these things usually appreciate in value over time. So there's the potential for a capital gain on the disposition of those. And then any other personal assets, such as maybe a vehicle or furniture, that kind of stuff, that usually depreciates in value. So therefore, it's unlikely that you'd have to pay any tax when you dispose of those. And then real estate, so if you have, say, a rental property, then you'd have to have get an appraisal done on that, and that your final return deems to dispose of that at fair market value, so you could incur a capital gain and also recapture if you've depreciating the value of the property by means of deferring the tax until such a time that you've disposed of it. So if you're a sole proprietor and you have private business assets, there is a possibility of minimizing tax by filing a second final tax return. It's called a rights and things return. So it essentially allows you to get access to two personal tax credits on your return. And then other capital assets, if you have, so if you had equipment and those kinds of things, then you would have to dispose of those at fair market value, record the gain. If you were a partner, if you'd have to dispose of your partnership interest. If you're the final partner in that partnership, then the partnership would cease to exist and all of the assets in the partnership would be deemed disposed of. However, the capital gain could be sheltered if it's a qualifying farm partnership and farm property, so the deferrals and catch-up, all of those things like your optional inventory adjustments and mandatory inventory adjustments would be recognized on death, and you would have to pay the tax on those. Such things as land quota can be sheltered with your capital gains exemption that Darren's previously discussed. And then you could have shares of private companies. So the capital gain can also be sheltered with the capital gains deduction if it's a qualifying small business corporation. And there's also some planning available to utilize that and avoid double taxation. And then foreign property, you'd also have to file in two different countries, so there's just some additional complexities there.
I was just going to add, we had a great question earlier here before the presentation, but one of the things I always be talking about is more on the U.S. side of things. If you're a U.S. citizen, so basically to define a U.S. citizen to be anybody that was born in the U.S., or potentially if your parents were born in the U.S., there's certain thresholds, but there may be some U.S. filing issues, even though you might never have filed in the U.S. at all. As a citizen, the U.S. taxes on citizenship, whereas every other country taxes on residency. So if you fall in the U.S. tax side of things, and as Ray was noting there, foreign properties from an estate planning side of things, could have a potential impact there that we're able to.
So. So who can claim the capital gains deduction? So that's that $824,000 that's exempt from tax. So you have to be a resident in Canada. And then you'd have to have property that qualifies. So that would be shares of a small business corporation, some farming property if it qualifies, and same thing with the fishing property if it qualifies. And so when can you use it? So you can use it when you sell eligible property, so farmland, quota, You can also use it during your lifetime as part of a, what we call an internal reorganization, or you can utilize it upon death. So some of the planning we have is spousal gifts, so we can elect to just roll everything to the spouse at cost, so no gains are recognized on death, instead they're just deferred. And then same thing, you can elect to roll farmland or farming or fishing property to a child or grandchild. So no cost on death, but then you can roll that cost. The other option is sometimes you don't want to dispose of it at fair market value. That way the person that has passed away is able to use their capital gains exemption. The cost is then higher to the beneficiary receiving it. One of the advantages of electing up on death is that you don't have to pay alternative minimum tax, which is essentially a prepayment of tax, which you might recognize if you are disposing it during your lifetime. Disadvantage is that you may have your old age security clawback, where you have to repay all of that in the year of death if you're electing up. So gifts to spouse, so like I said, you can just gift it to your spouse, and the cost just transfers. You're just essentially deferring the tax. And I just mentioned to the, you can't elect to dispose of it at fair market value. Or you can have a qualifying trust so that the spouse will receive the income on the property during their lifetime, and no one else has access to the income or the capital. So typically we'll do something like this. If a spouse dies, we'll set up the trust, and then when the other spouse marries and they may have other children, you know, it protects the original spouse. So now some discussion on personal donations. So right now, if you donate more than $200, you will get a benefit of about 50%. So that's 29% federally and 21% provincially, so 50%. And you can also combine the donations that both spouses make and include them on one return so that you get more donations and you're receiving the 50% return on those. And the maximum you can claim is up to 75% of your net income. And for the higher tax rate in Alberta, so starting in 2016, you can get an additional 4% for the difference in the increase in your personal tax level that's taxed at that higher rate. So for example, if you donated $10,000, you would get a reduction in your tax of $5,000. And for corporate donations, so Darren went over the corporate rates. So currently, if you make a donation in your small business corporation, so you have income less than $500,000, you'll get a tax break of 13.5%. And if you're not a small business corporation paying higher rate tax, your savings is 27%, which is also limited to the 75% of their net income. So instead of making donations in a corporation, the shareholder could draw the money from the company and make the donation personally and therefore get a higher tax credit. And then you can also, as Darren previously mentioned, have your donations set out in your will. So when a person passes away, they do get, it's not limited to the 75% of their net income. They can donate up to 100%. And then any of the unused donations can be carried back to a prior tax year in order to reduce taxes previously paid. And they are able to claim donations from the year of death and any unused donations in any of the last previous 5 years. However, the obligations must be stated in the will that they wanted to make the donations.
Hi, Trey. And I know we're limited on time here, so what I'm probably going to skip through these other slides fairly quickly, but I think the noteworthy thing, as Ray has outlined, is here in Alberta, if you make a donation, it's a 50% tax credit on your income. And considering our top tax rate is 48%, if we jump, if you happen to be in that bracket, you're still further ahead by that donation, because it is a huge tax savings. But if you're in a lower bracket, they're still going to grant you the 50%. And as Ray noted, if you happen to be in the top bracket over 200,000 and getting taxed there with the federal tax increase on the extra 4%, they're going to give you a 54% tax credit as well. So it's a huge incentive. I know the government encourages it, so if you're looking at making donations to the church or anything like that, you definitely, from a tax side of things, will save huge. And there is different ways to make those donations, and I'm just going to skip through because I know we're limited on time. But basically, there's different strategies you guys can ultimately look at for your donation. Cash is easy, but sometimes with a little bit of thought and planning and strategy, depending on your personal situation, you want to make that donation, then to the charity or to the church. On there is ways to really maximize your benefit, and some of them would include, and it's in your packages as well, but you could look at the life, there's life insurance strategies you can do to really benefit. You can do gifts of publicly listed securities. There's a huge savings there because you don't have to recognize the capital gains tax on your personal return, but still get access to the 50% credit. You can always still do gifts of your registered accounts, gifts of real estate, shares in private corporations, or gifts of any other type of property. May not be as tax advantageous from the other ones, but you still get the 50% credit, and you're contributing to a great cause as well too. So yeah, the government does recognize that donations is a huge factor, and they are giving the credits for that. So in the package, it's just, it notes a couple of things for you guys to consider and some of the tax issues there. But of course, with anything, when you're looking at an estate planning, it's always good to review it every couple of years, and especially look at your will. When's the last time somebody reviewed their will? I know I did mine this past year, but it's something that you want to review, make sure that's in place. I think from a legal side of things, and Lynn probably could speak better to it, but we always encourage people to consider your personal directives and your power of attorneys as well on there, and have you talk to your executor. Who is the executor of your estate? Is your executor here in Canada? If they're not, then there might be an issue there from a tax side of things. So there's definite things to consider during this process, but I encourage everyone to at least step back and take a review just to make sure it's achieving your guys' objectives. So. So with that, I think met the timeline. Yeah, on there, I'll pass it back to Lynn. But thank you very much for inviting us out, and really appreciate and talking taxes. And as I said, we'll be around after to answer any other questions you guys may have. So,
okay. Thanks. Thank you. I always really appreciate Darren and the people that he brings with him. Thank you, Ray, for coming and for sharing your expertise too. And thank you all for being here. And, you know, they'll be around to talk to you. There is another seminar happening here at 4 o'clock, but I don't think you have to necessarily rush off. We just needed to be able to change the computers and so forth. So, enjoy.